Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Corey, are you packed yet? His mom called up the stairs to her 10-year-old son. In a minute, Mom, came the reply. We have to leave soon, his mom responded, and the cleaning service has to come get ready for the next tenants. Okay, Corey grunted. I'm coming. Can't imagine what's keeping him, his mom complained to no one in particular while she tied up the last bag of trash. I know, piped up 8-year-old Annika. He's writing. What? Corey's mom looked at her daughter. Yes, Annika continued. He calls it his journal, and he writes in it every day. She stopped to savor the information. Maybe it's in a secret code. From a parent's perspective, what can we do to help keep our children's academic skills fresh over vacation times? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a teacher, so she has plenty of experience with kids before and after their vacations. Kara Will teaches the 4 and 5 Red Tails, a classroom of 4th and 5th grade students at Burgundy Farm Country Day School, an independent pre-kindergarten through 8th grade progressive school in Alexandria, Virginia. Originally a graphic designer, Kara transitioned to teaching 7 years ago so that she could use her creativity to make a difference in children's lives. She earned her BA from San Francisco State University and her MS from the Bank Street College of Education. Kara lives with her husband, her 1-year-old son, and 2 cats in Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Kara.
Thank you. So nice to be here.
So, what's the most significant change teachers see in kids' skills after a lengthy vacation period?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's necessarily a significant change. I mean, usually it's perceived on the child's part. Often it's just about gaining confidence back again, and it's all there. But I actually am lucky enough to teach 4th and 5th grade. So I see, you know, 4th graders come in, and after the summer when they graduate to being the 5th graders, honestly, they come in with more confidence and more excitement and more, they're ready to go. They feel like they're the leaders in the classroom. That's kind of a unique thing in our school. There are definitely things that we need to get back, just the ability to focus for long periods of time. We try to really kind of ease into the stronger academics. But it's all there, and it's about just warming up almost after a summer's break or a spring break.
Is it a difference in experiences? In other words, in the summer, they're usually not in too many structured activities, and yet when they come back into a classroom, it's very structured.
I would say that that's probably correct. But I also want to say again that sometimes it's just they come alive. They're ready to be back. They're rested, and they're almost more ready than they were at the end of the school year and able to take on new challenges, especially as you see kids grow. I mean, I'm always amazed as the 4th grader leaves and they come back in and they're a 5th grader, how their skills do progress just by their own personal development and their brain growing and they're able to take on new things. So that's also amazing. So I wouldn't always say that it's necessarily a decline in skills. They're almost rested sometimes.
What kinds of kids would you say are more likely to have trouble sort of getting back the academic discipline and some of the things we consider skills than others?
It's really always hard for me to say a kind of kid. So children are people. They're all so different, and they have different strengths and different areas that they need help and support. And that's the way we really focus on all of the children in our school. And I, as a teacher, like to think about it. And it depends on who the child is. And we look for ways in the academics to give them activities that will make them feel confident again. So, for example, if you have a child who's a visual learner or who loves art, you know, you need to find ways that they can explore the art and then write about it or find out what is important to them. And that's the big thing, I think, is finding what skills they need help on. And I couldn't say that there's a particular type of child that loses skills. There are definitely children who are more active and used to the freedom and who enjoy that. But luckily at our school, we value that so much. So we build that into our days as well.
But maybe kids who have trouble with certain skills, like kids who might have trouble with math skills over a prolonged period of time when they don't exercise those skills, would you say that it's a little harder for them to sort of get back those kinds of abilities?
I would say that, you know, it's really important, and it's the one thing as a teacher that I say is important as skill and drills is learning your multiplication facts and your addition facts and those kinds of things, because that just makes you more able to think about the bigger things and to apply those skills. So, you know, it's like the foundation of the house. And so, yes, I mean, math skills are definitely important to exercise over the summer, but first and foremost, I think finding a way to put those math skills into projects and to explorations and things that are meaningful to the kid and make sense are going to have much more lasting effect than the skill and drill. You do need to memorize your multiplication facts. There's no way around that. But if you have a reason to apply them, then they feel the value, and it's not necessarily a parent or a teacher telling them it's valuable. It comes from within. Oh, I need this. This needs to be bolstered up because I can use it better and I don't have to think about it. And they feel more confident and more successful.
I think if they have opportunities to use it that are just kind of naturally happening, it makes it easier. I was in the Boston area last weekend, and one of my grandchildren had project she was participating in, and one of the things we had to do for that project was buy 300 donut munchkins. And they came in 50s. They came in boxes of 50. So we asked her, can you figure out for us how many boxes we need? So she had to think about it quite a bit. She didn't write anything down, but she did figure it out. And I thought, this is very interesting. She doesn't realize she's doing math. She's doing this project that's really significant for her.
Absolutely. It definitely does. And there's so many opportunities to make that happen. And I think as a parent and as a teacher, the biggest thing is to ask your kids those kinds of questions, to give them the opportunity to solve problems. And the academic skills, I mean, we teach the academic skills because they're helpful in life. So they're embedded, you know, they're there. You go to the grocery store, you know, have them estimate the totals, you know, have them figure out what, you know, two boxes of cereal would be. You know, that's a very quick opportunity. Talk to them about, do you necessarily need to know the exact cost of this, or would an estimate be, you know, good enough in this case? But that's just there at the grocery store. That's not even, you know, spending days and days on a project, although a project is lots of fun too.
What do kids usually do naturally that might contribute to maintaining academic skills? They kind of, what do they do on their own?
First and foremost, as children are young, there's play. You know, play is the biggest thing. Dramatic play is, you know, the way that kids figure out how to live in our world, right? You know, they pretend to be the doctor. They pretend to have a restaurant. They pretend to have a store. Well, there's academics in all of those things. You know, if you have a store, you know, you could help them. Why don't we make a catalog, you know, and you can take pictures and help them write captions, you know, look and describe what they have. There's also, of course, math involved in selling things. And that's just so natural for kids. Even before they can actually write, they've got their notepad and they're taking your order at a restaurant. So, I mean, that's play, but that's how they're learning, you know, to exist in what we consider academics. But it's just life skills.
And it's interesting, kids at a very young age do things that we wouldn't even consider academic, like collecting things. Mm-hmm. And a child with then a box that has dividers is trying to decide what makes things similar, what makes them dissimilar. So already their academic skills at work.
In preparing to talk to you about this, I asked our faculty and staff at Burgundy, you know, what kinds of things can we do? What do you recommend to parents? And so many of them were based in things that kids naturally do, like go on a hike, take a bag, and just collect things, you know, and then take them home and they can journal about them, or, you know, they can sort them, or start a collection, you know, collect coins, collect stamps. These things are just fun for kids, but you're right, the sorting and organizing, you know, helps develop math sense and even observation skills, which are important in science. And so there's so much there that kids do naturally and enjoy.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on keeping kids' academic skills fresh over vacations.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with teacher Kara Will about keeping kids' academic skills fresh over vacation time. What can parents do to augment kids' academic skills within a child's normal vacation time routines? We're not talking about drill and skill here and all that kind of stuff.
Right. But I mean, I think, as I mentioned before, the grocery store is a great place. Restaurants, you know, have them calculate the tip once they get old enough for that. When kids are younger, you know, you could even have them, you know, as I was getting off the elevator, I had to look at the signs, right, and figure out which way was the studio, where was I going. Have the kid be the navigator, have them lead the way. Even if you're taking the train, look at the map together. I mean, those are all on your way to where you're going as a parent. And you're just naturally helping them be the leaders, which gives them the confidence and helps them be able to take risks, too. And I think those are all important skills.
I think when they can read the signs, they can figure out where do you get in line in this restaurant.
Absolutely.
Or where do you find the person who will seat you? And it's a very nice sense of mastery.
Mm-hmm. Even before they can read, I have many friends who are teachers, but I had my son's first birthday party just recently, and she was there with her now three-year-old. And, you know, I had made these roll-ups with bananas and peanut butter in them, and there were some chocolate chips in there just for a little, you know, fun. And she took it, and she said, you know, what do you see? You know, and had him just describe what was in there. And that was just, you know, at a regular birthday party and something he was going to eat. So it's lunchtime. What do you see in there? What did I prepare for you? Have them explore their lunch. Have them explore what you're ordering at dinner. That's just a natural way to just asking them questions, I think. Letting them lead.
Sometimes they like to explore somebody else's lunch and make a trade.
Exactly. There you go.
And I was thinking for the young ones, even things like spatial awareness, which we then deal with reading and geometry and all that kind of stuff, but how many towels will go in the basket?
Oh, yeah.
Or how many boxes can we from the grocery store can we put in our grocery bag or things like that, big and small, that kind of stuff.
Again, you know, you could so easily just do it yourself or even ask your child to help you do it. You know, let's put these towels in here. Here are 10 towels. I know they'll fit. And you're providing the dialogue. You're providing, you know,
the answers
instead of asking them to problem solve. And I think getting them in the habit of problem solving is the best thing you can do for your child academically.
Are there certain new experiences we can introduce over vacation times that actually sharpen our children's academic skills?
Absolutely. And I think the key here is, again, knowing your child. Who is your child and what's new to them? And the summer is a wonderful time to explore what is important to them, to explore their passions. As a teacher, we always try to find the child's passions and their interests, but we don't often have time to really go off on, you know, an exploration of music history or a certain artist that they're interested in, or even, you know, if they're interested in China and we're studying the Maya, the Inca, and the Aztec, we might not be able to help that child explore that passion completely. But in the summertime, you have the time. And also as a parent, you have the one-on-one. You have that opportunity to be with that child and to really, you know, let them lead, let them tell you where they want to go and ask them the questions and let them decide where the project will go, where their passions might go.
I think also we always think ideally of the one-on-one, but in families where there are siblings, and there's no, as they say, there's either man-to-man or zone-to-zone, depending
right.
on how many children there are. Is it possible to dedicate a day and say, this is Johnny Day. What would you like to do today, Johnny? And sometimes it seems siblings might learn from each other about passions they might not even have paid attention to that the other one is interested in.
Absolutely. So if it's Johnny's day, how does he schedule it? How do you make this thing happen? You know, look at the times that we have allotted. These are, you know, we have 3 hours in the afternoon. How do you want it to happen? And then you're right, he can teach his siblings about that, but also then follow his passion and his drive and his plan for the day. So absolutely, I think that that's a great way to do it. And yes, it's not always one-on-one. I do understand that.
Now, traveling is a different ballgame entirely because you're all sort of cooped up together in good ways and bad ways. How can you do things for children while they're traveling that also help to maintain their academic skills?
Well, I think there's traditional car traveling activities, you know, let's look for state license plates, let's, you know, have a map with us and, you know, find out where they are, learn the abbreviations, collect as many states as you want. But you could also, you know, have them look at a map before you go. I mean, if you're traveling by car or even by air, have them figure out the route that you'll be traveling. If you go to a new city, you could have them explore the history of that city, you know, help them to find out what makes that place tick, what makes it special. And of course, you know, visiting museums and all of those, you know, places of interest that most places have something that they call their own, you know, which is always, there's learning embedded in there, reading signs, taking photographs, keeping a scrapbook, journaling about where you've gone. Those are all great opportunities for learning while traveling.
And I guess if kids are old enough, maybe after they've read about wherever they're going, each child might perhaps have a choice of, gee, I'd like to see that. Well, Janie can choose one place and Johnny can choose another place and so on.
Absolutely. Helping them learn about new foods and looking at new restaurants, you know, I mean, how, give them some choice. I mean, you can't always give them the total choice because we have our own need as well. But, you know, that would be, you know, everybody chooses a restaurant one night or, you know, a place that they could explore new things. I think that's a great idea.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on keeping kids' academic skills fresh over vacations.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with teacher Kara Will about keeping kids' academic skills fresh over vacation times.
I guess the other thing is when you're going to new places, if you set the stage beforehand, you know, what thing can you find that is, you know, funny or is different or, I don't know, you know, fill in the blank, some category, and then the kids are tuned in to look for that.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. And the idea of scavenger hunts is great. You know, talk to the kids before you leave about what they might find. And you're right, look for something humorous or I heard there's a great clock tower, you know, and getting them excited. But also then they're observing and they're looking for the things around them. And you can embed reading into that. You know, I heard there's a great sign that says, and they're scanning every sign along the way, trying to figure out, you know, what it says. Or you could, the idea of photographing for your scavenger hunt is great, and then journaling about it later really keeps, there's so many things in there. There's the reading, there's the writing, there's observing. You could have them pay attention to addresses or numbers in another way.
I think it means we have to do our homework, too.
That's true. That's true.
And I guess, like all of us, when you take children somewhere, you come back with a lot of debris. You come back with, you know, wrappers and tickets and who knows, all kinds of junk. And I was thinking, I never did this with my kids, so maybe it's really a pipe dream, but I wonder if it would be possible to take all that junk, put it in some kind of a box, and then at a dinner sometime a couple of weeks later, have each one pull out something from the box and talk about that and what that was part of in the trip.
Absolutely. That's great. That's a wonderful idea. And, you know, it's not always possible because we have, you know, limited vacation times. But another great idea is to take kids where you know that they'll be studying something in school that year and making the learning real. For example, we're studying colonial America, which is so perfect for this area. But, you know, they could go to Jamestown. They can go to Old Town. They can, you know, there's so much to see just in your area. But also we studied the Silk Road, for example, and there was a Silk Road exhibit in New York last year. There was a Silk Road exhibit in Philadelphia over the winter. So looking for those kinds of things helps keep them excited about school that's coming up, and then they can go into school with this confidence. And also, you know, we all learn so much better from experiences than we do from just reading about it. So that's always a great plus for vacations.
And what you're saying, I think, is a good thing for parents to pass on for kids, in that a subject matter doesn't ever stand alone.
Right.
History has to do with a whole lot of other skills that go into it. But I was thinking that history, particularly when you're talking about different time periods or different events, would seem maybe to give kids a sense of grounding.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of something that came from a long way back and is going a long way forward. So that may be of special interest to kids, depending
Absolutely.
On where they live.
You can do that right at home. I mean, learning about the history of where you live, and especially learning about what children did historically, is always going to pull kids in, and then you can tie in all the other stuff, you know. But I remember, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area in California, and the history of California is fascinating to me because it's where I'm from. But, I mean, it's all stuff you learn when you're a child. Like, there's plenty of stories just in your own community that you could find. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to take a trip to travel. You can even, you know, walk outside your door. One thing that I thought about was cataloging the kinds of trees in your neighborhood. You can take photographs, or they could do sketches and identify those trees or the animals, or just, I know when I was in New York City, I taught first and second graders there, and we would go to the different communities and we were studying community, but also how different people meet the needs of a community. So, you know, we'd go to the Asian American community, we went to Harlem, then that's in any city that's near you. You don't have to live in that city to get there. But also, you know, across from our school, there's a Latin American grocery store. And just going into that grocery store and, you know, finding new products or new things you've never seen before, or even your regular grocery store, you can look at the produce. Where do you think that comes from? What is the country of origin of this? Where do avocados grow? Because I haven't seen an avocado tree here, you know. That's traveling even without leaving your home. Also embedding it in things that you do every day with your children, which sometimes are the easiest, easiest things to do.
So how do we apply all this to children who are just beginning to acquire some academic skills?
Children who are learning to read and write, they're always still ready to play and ready to pretend and engage in that. But, I mean, storytelling, you know, you can learn history through storytelling and through just going to see things. So those are great opportunities for kids to get engaged. As for the everyday activities, I mean, you can look for shapes. You know, do you see a square? Do you see a circle? I mean, you do a geometry hunt in just this room that we're sitting in. You know, there's so many things that we could talk about, even, you know, lines and things like that. Looking for letters. Again, those are all things that you can develop a habit for. Like, you know, I'm walking out the door. Okay, what do you see that starts with A? And children will bring it up. And you might have to say, okay, we're not going to play that right now. But, because it becomes a game. And that's the key to learning, especially when you're older. I mean, we do in fourth and fifth grade, we do simulations all the time. You know, pretend you're an explorer. Okay, you're on the ship with your crew and you're the helmsman and you're the captain, and they eat it up. And at the same time, they're learning that it was really a dangerous thing to do, to go out at sea. You know, you hit a dead calm, you hit a storm, you know, the food was awful, the conditions were awful, but there was this excitement, you know, and you were a crew. All the while they're pretending. I mean, they're playing, and you think, oh, well, a 10-year-old, you know, they're not really going to play so much, but that's what they're doing. I think especially, you know, when kids are just learning academics, just embedded in play again.
The other thing that we haven't said specifically, but it would seem that it's probably an important thing, is the auditory skills. We're talking about talking.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see? Can you do this? And I was thinking that kids, when they're beginning to learn language, even before they learn written language, they're learning oral language and they're hearing. mm-hmm. and games that might have to do with sounds, rhymes, anything where they can do that kind of thing would seem to give them the academic practice, but also sort of enjoyment, sharpening their hearing, and it's something that they could actually do.
Young readers love repetition in books because they're learning, and that helps them to notice patterns and makes them comfortable and feel safe. And if you repeat it, you're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You could do the same thing with songs and patty cake games and even learning poems, or, you know, take a favorite book and even learn to memorize it. And those would be fun games for kids, too.
Before we have to close, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about some of the issues we've been discussing?
Well, I think your biggest resource is your child, and to look at your child and ask them questions and talk to them about the things that are interesting to your child. But their teachers are great resources, asking them about things in the community. The libraries are always great resources, museums. As far as there are some websites that are great resources, federal resources for educational excellence. And then there's also education.com, and they have some articles on learning during summer, so you could do a little bit of exploration there. We will be putting some information on our website, which is burgundyfarm.org, and there we'll have some links to some things that you could explore.
Kara, Will, thank you so much for being with us and helping us to figure out how we can help keep our children's academic skills sharp and stimulated over vacation times.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 476. Please spell anything that's not obvious, and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. Or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from you, our listeners. Thank you for supporting the production of Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.